Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. LibertyTalk.fm.
Good morning. Welcome to Medicine on Call. Today, I'd like to talk about a few topics. One thing that came up yesterday while I was seeing a patient just made me think about the direction of our healthcare system, not the policy, but the physicians. You know, we actually as physicians have a lot of power, which we've just ceded, left on the playing field, and we've been led by the nose by everybody except what our consciences and our intellect should tell us. I'm looking at a patient yesterday who came in for an ENT problem. We started talking, taking her history, and she told me she was on this medication, which I had never heard of. And so I asked, you know, why are you taking it? And what is it? She said, oh, it's an antidepressant, and I'm taking it for my hot flashes, my menopausal symptoms of hot flash. And I just stopped. I just couldn't believe that I was hearing this. She was taking something called Paxil, which is an antidepressant, which has been shown to have some problems with heart disease, heart attack, issues with side effects. And she's taking this because she has hot flashes. She's not depressed, by the way. She said it was a non-hormonal treatment is what she started off with. And then I asked her what it was, and she said it was an antidepressant. And then we just went off track for a bit. I had to actually look this up because I really am not a fan of taking off-label medications, basically, unless you can prove there's a real reason to do it. This one has side effects. Menopausal symptoms are not great, but do they lend themselves to taking a medication that potentially can affect the entire body and in a way that you're not exactly sure what's going to happen? I mean, it didn't make a lot of sense, so I looked it up, and it was a study, a trial, a 24-week trial, by the way, of about 500 women, and they found that if they took this Paxil, which they're now calling Pexiva, some stupid name, but you know they do these things. This medication would lower the heart flashes by about, let me see, it was 37 fewer episodes per week. It didn't stop them, it just lowered them by a small percentage, and they said, quote, a modest amount. So that seemed like a waste of time. But then I looked at the placebo, and the placebo was almost equal to the effect of the drug. So basically, the women who got the sugar pill basically had almost as good a response as the folks who took the antidepressant. And this was the take-home message from the study, and I'm going to quote it. Let's see. You see large placebo responses in almost every study. Placebo is a very potent treatment for vasomotor symptoms, which is this hot flash, even though it doesn't sound like that. That's why it's so important that we do studies with placebo control. And I thought to myself, if the placebo is just as good as the medication, then obviously the medication doesn't work the way they said it does. And you can extrapolate this out to a lot of, let's apply it to every medicine that's come down the pipe, especially the new ones. Is it worth having a modest response when placebo is almost as good? You're going to spend billions of dollars, healthcare dollars, in prescribing these medicines that are no better, essentially, than a sugar pill lots of the time, most of the time. It's time to really start thinking critically about clean your medicine cabinet out. Do you really need to be on all of these medicines? Are they really helping you? Is it making is it making your life really better? Or are you ending up taking more medicines to control the side effects of other medicines? We've talked about it before on the show, but I think now in the age of Obamacare, where if you have a health savings account, you're supposed to buy a brand medicine, brand name drug, which is sometimes 10 times, 20 times more expensive. Do you really need to be on it? Is there something that you can do personally that you can reverse your need for medication. If you're overweight and you're on a diabetic medicine, maybe you should try losing some weight. Maybe there really is now. If you didn't have a push for it before, there should, I hope, be a push for it now. Because if you can save half of your paycheck or whatever it is going out to paying for these medicines, and you can keep that in your pocket and feel better, perform better in work, school, personally, wouldn't that be worth it? I mean, how long basically are patients and doctors going to be led by the nose by a system that is designed to hook you, to get you on a medicine, keep you on it as a daily for the rest of your life? That is the goal. I used this analogy before with ENT, but there's allergy testing, allergy treatment, something called sublingual immunization, where you can take drops of an allergen under the tongue to retrain your immune system to stop responding to grass, mold, tree, whatever. Or you can take shots, which basically do the same thing by a different route. They are a higher dose generally, and it's done through the subcutaneous as opposed to under the tongue. The drug companies have come up with a pill, an allergy pill, somewhat similar technically to the sublingual, but not. So what you're supposed to do with this is every spring take this allergy pill to tamp down your allergy response. Again, you're not treating anything. They're trying to hook you onto taking a pill that they want to compete with treatment. So instead of you actually being treated and you have an endpoint and you've corrected the problem, their goal is to medicate you and put a Band-Aid on it. I think it's now important to decide whether you want to treat a symptom, put a Band-Aid on it, never fix the problem, and be on the hook from your pocketbook standpoint, at the very least, and from side effects, on the other hand, for the rest of your life. I mean, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Every medicine is a controlled poison, technically. It has a dose range that has a safety profile. If you stay within it for the average patient on these studies, it should be safe enough to use it. But these studies don't usually include children. They don't include black people or other minorities. It's based on a very small population, and then they extrapolate out how they think it's going to affect other people. But they don't take into account biological diversity. I can take a medicine, it works wonderfully for me, but it may not for you, and vice versa. And what I may be allergic to, you may not be. And so when they make these pronouncements and they make them into stone, it doesn't serve everybody. And that's a problem. And that's the major problem I have. I have a lot of problems with the healthcare system. That's one. This one size fits all. It doesn't serve people, and it's more expensive down the road. I've had Dr. Amerling on the show, who's a nephrologist, a kidney doctor, who told me that when people get admitted to the hospital, they get this algorithm track if they have diabetes. And it's a crazy workup. If they put you on a sliding scale insulin, they do all of these pre-treatments that you may or may not need. Most of the time you don't, and it jacks up the bill. They put you on antibiotics prophylactically. Why? And it doesn't work. If the protocols worked in the hospitals, I don't believe that we would have so many increasing cases of hospital-acquired infections, of multiple resistant bugs. You're more likely to get sicker in a hospital than you are being in your home at this point. So the system doesn't work. You have people still getting wrong medications, even though they have all the fail-safes in with the electronic medical records. You have people who still get the wrong drugs prescribed, even though they have all of these checks and balances. You still have medical professionals who the doctor prescribes a drug, and it gets taken by the medical professional, and the patient gets salt water. I mean, so you have all of these things. If someone wants to circumvent the system, if somebody wants to doesn't understand what they're doing, they can use the symptom system to prop themselves up and give medical care that basically isn't very good, but it looks good on paper. So it's like, you know, teaching for a test is the same principle, you know, like the Common Core issue. If all teachers are teaching for the student to pass the test, yet they're not teaching content, the student doesn't come out ahead. They can't even survive in society. That's the same thing in medicine. And it's life and death. It's not just whether you can read or not, which is bad enough. It's life and death. And it's a cost center problem. So medical costs have gone up. Even though the pronouncements from Obamacare proponents are that medicine, the healthcare costs have dropped, you know, people are loving it. It's awesome. And they keep saying it like, if they keep saying it, it becomes true. And it's not. It's about policy versus reality. And policy does not apply to real world most of the time. Most of these things that Congress passes is a knee-jerk or lobby-driven, you know, response to something. It's legislating to get a response that you want, not what you need. You know, most people would like Congress to leave them alone. What's their approval rate now? 9%, Dave? Lower? I don't even know. And it's like they're in a vacuum. They only care about what we want every 2 years or every what's it, 6 years, 4 years. They don't care, honestly. And if we think that they're going to get up there and do our bidding, then we need to really have our own heads examined, because it's absolutely true now. There's nothing that I can see that they've done on this round of this Congress after this last vote that's done anything that we've asked them to do. We now are probably going to get that Trans-Pacific Partnership thing, which is, it basically just erodes American sovereignty. We're fast-tracking immigration. We are mandating, you know, vaccines. There's just, it's going in the wrong direction. It's nothing what anybody who voted in the election, who wanted to change, are getting or expect to get. And I'm not even angry anymore. I just want to find a way to work within the system and make it work for me. Because if we still rail against it, we're giving them what they want, which is for us to get more frustrated and them to clamp down more. Just find a way to make the system work for you. And there are loopholes all within it. And the most important loophole you have is your personal choices. Nobody can make you go out and shop in Walmart and get Chinese vitamins. Nobody has to make you do that. You can decide to go to a local health food store, mom and pop, where you can actually speak to somebody where they're, you know, where they're sourcing this stuff from, and you know the quality's higher, and you know it's maybe a little bit more expensive, but you get what you pay for. And maybe it's a mindset change that people need, don't you think? Where it should be about quality, not about how much something costs. I don't think anybody can deny the fact that if you want something that's good, you're going to have to pay for it. If it's free, it never really is very good. It's cheap. It is slapdash. It is just get them in, get them out, and shut you up. And as long as we don't respect ourselves and we decide that we're not worthy, we'll keep getting the same crap. I don't think it's going to change. But we're paying for the system to screw us over at this point.
You know, I'm old enough to look back, and I do a lot of looking back, as a matter of fact. It's a lot further back than it is going forward. But, you know, this is the way we've been trained. Just what you said. Think of the fast food restaurants. You know good and damn well you're getting garbage when you go to McDonald's. But why is there a line at McDonald's every day of the week and to pick up and leave, you know? Mm-hmm. The car line, the parking places are filled. So we've been, you know, I don't know if it's conspiracy. I just don't know. But we've been trained to take, you know, get it fast, get your quick results, mm-hmm. And move on down the street.
And there's no skin in the game. You can get it, you don't have to work for it. There's nothing in my life that I've ever done that I didn't work for, that I didn't really appreciate. When I worked hard and I struggled and it came through, that was like winning the lotto. You know, it was great. My effort translated into a win. if it just happened to you, it's just not the same value associated with it. I mean, on that note, let's take a small break. You're listening to Medicine on Call. Welcome back to Medicine on Call. In the break, we were talking about how do we educate people to start being more proactive in looking, you know, peeling back the layers, looking under the hood, and being more critical of what we're being told. You know, there was an article in New York Times by Paul Krugman, I think it's New York Times, probably is, opinion piece, and it was complete doublespeak and demonization of anybody with a point of view that he didn't agree with. Oh, Obamacare is awesome. All these haters, I'm paraphrasing, haters who predicted that it wouldn't work, that it would be a death spiral in terms of people dropping out of the insurance, were all wrong. They should apologize. It's working better than we could have imagined. And it was just ridiculous. And everything he said was the opposite. It's not working the way they wanted it to. Well, you know what? I'm sorry. Maybe it is, because if they wanted single payer, if they wanted to put private doctors out of business and make them run into the arms of hospitals as employees, if they wanted to make sure that the seniors and people with the catastrophic diseases had huger hurdles to overcome in order to get care, then yeah, it's working like a dream. I agree with him. It was awesome. But for those of us who live in the real world, who actually are people who have to enter the system, it doesn't work. And this is the sickness of this. Congress is so two-faced and hypocritical about, especially the Republicans. Listen to this. This will just make your head spin. There's an article in The Hill where five Republicans are fighting a subpoena by David Vitter, who's a Republican from Louisiana, who has a request from the DC marketplace, their Obamacare exchange, to open up the you know, pull back the layers on what happened with Congress. Remember when Congress, when the Congress people wrote themselves basically out of the mandate, and then they wanted their pages and their employees to actually be eligible for the exchanges, or I'm sorry, the subsidies. Well, what had happened was Congress somehow declared themselves to be a small business. That's shocking. And under that auspice, they had their employees sign up in the exchanges and get subsidies. I'm sure Congress people probably did it too. We actually heard this from Ted Cruz. Now that his wife has left the Goldman Sachs, he was asked the question, well, will you take a subsidy? And he said, I'm going to follow the letter of the law, which really riled me. So the bottom line is, there must be Congress people getting subsidies on our taxpayer dollar for Obamacare. You know they're not poor. They're not making McDonald's wages up there. Hardly. So they get to double dip. You get to screw over doctors, which they seem to love to do, even if they are doctors up there. And they get to lord it over us and double down on the very things that don't work. Gee, I wonder if they make more money next year, if IRS is going to come after them and take their tax return. Probably not. I mean, so people, these Republicans, and let's name them, Jim Risch of Idaho, Deb Fischer from Nebraska, Rand Paul from Kentucky, Kelly Ayotte from New Hampshire, and Enzi from Wyoming. I mean, these are the people who supposedly are, I mean, we know Rand Paul is a libertarian, right? It's about less government control, more patient, he's a doctor for God's sake, more patient-centered, and this is all about gaming the system and putting yourself in a position to win, no matter you win, I say, you lose, I win, I win, I win. That's exactly what this is. And for those people who now have to go to the ER because they can't afford their deductibles, maybe because they didn't get a subsidy, how's that help them? You know, why aren't they doing something to make, maybe they should put it, if you want to keep this crap going, put a cap on the subsidies, I'm sorry, on the out-of-pockets, which they have no interest in doing, because that's how you limit care. That's how you limit cost of health care, in their opinion. You have less people entering the system. It's just like the insurance companies. You buy your policy, or you're mandated to buy your policy, and they make money when you don't use it, or when you make the panel of the physicians smaller because you've kick doctors off the roll of the doctors within your system. They become out of network. And you don't give people out-of-network benefits, so they can't go to those doctors. And there's so few doctors in the panel that you have to wait forever to see a doctor. They have all sorts of games that they play. We're now getting questions where the patient has horrible sinus disease, has been on antibiotics almost every month for at least 5 years, who the CT scan shows disease everywhere, and they're asking me questions. And in the history, this is all said in my history, they come back with 7 questions that I now have to answer for them to consider approving the procedure. How many infections has she had? Has she been treated medically? I mean, did you read the history and present illness? Did you read it at all? Did you look at the CT scan? This is what they do. And it's a complete, I think they spend time at night thinking up how they can make another hurdle for a patient or a doctor to jump through. They just, it's amazing.
You know, we were talking about this on the immigration hour. I think across the board, the administration and Congress want everything to fail. Because if it all fails, then they control. They can put us under a one-payer system. They can dictate immigration. They can dictate our economy. You go to the ER, you go to the hospital, you can't pay, they take your house. Mm. So, it's on and on and on. The government, I sincerely believe, they want everything to fail so they can take charge of you.
Well, you have, it's problem, reaction, solution, right? So this system is bankrupt from an ethical and moral standpoint, in my opinion.
And monetarily, really.
And that too. I mean, there's only so much you can get. We have almost half the country on some sort of public or government assistance. Less and less people are working. Who's going to be left to pay taxes into this system? I don't know. But it's all about making someone dependent in some manner on the government. The doctors now with this HR 2 crap, that Medicare, they always call it wonderful names. Was it the Medicare and Children's up to CHIP Reauthorization Act or something? They care. Just stick a child in. I guess everybody's mind just turns off when you say, oh, it's for the kids. And Dr. Singleton was right. You read the first couple of pages, like, oh, this is okay. Once you get to page, what is it, like, I think it was like 200 pages. I read the thing. It was legal speak, and it got worse as you were reading it. And they're in the business of deciding how much a procedure is worth. In the next 2 or 3 years, I think it's 2017 or 18, they're going to decide how much a surgeon should be paid for a procedure. It's going to come from the government. All right? That's the goal. They are going to decide how much your services value-based. What do you think value-based means? It means they're going to decide what the value is. And trust me, they're going to make that value as low as they can go. It's going to be limbo, healthcare limbo, basically.
Wouldn't you like to be able to do that with our congressmen?
I'd love to have them have 1 year, just rotate them out, and you can never come back. All right, maybe give them 2 years and get rid of them. You once you've served once, you can never serve again. And they should stop lobbying altogether. I mean, that is the major problem. We talked about it last week. The top 10 lobbying groups are people who are, most of them stand to gain from Obamacare. And they have gained from AARP to the insurance companies to the hospitals. Everybody's gained except us as American citizens. The system is sick, and it's right in your face. Usually you don't find out about these things until down the road. But anybody, God forbid you're in a hospital or you have to go to a doctor, you know exactly how bad it is up front. And I just, if they'd listened to private doctors, we would have told them from the get-go, the system doesn't work. You have to change certain underpinnings of the system. Insurance companies should not be in the business of running the coding system, or, you know, they shouldn't be in the business of being the middleman with pharmacy benefit management. You know, they shouldn't be allowed to contract with certain pharmacy so that they're, quote, the preferred pharmacy, we shouldn't have a system that has crony layers set up within it, that there's always some track where the winners get the lion's share and they end up being able to lord it over and muscle out competition. They don't, well, this is the bottom line, Dave, they don't want any competition. None. They don't want private doctors in a system like this because we're not going to do what they want us to do. They don't want patients who can make their own healthcare choices because they're going to choose what's best for them. They don't want that. Wake up, folks. They don't want you to be able to go to your doctor and say, you know what, I don't want to take this antidepressant for my menopause. What natural things can I take that's cheaper, more effective, and actually won't hurt anything else in my system? I mean, and I'll be able to use my health savings account to purchase those things. That's what they don't want.
How would this analogy strike you? And we got to take a break, but insurance companies have become the house in Las Vegas. You know, you think about it, none of us know where we're going health-wise, even though we may take care of ourselves, take vitamins, but, you know, somebody else bigger than us may decide we have a problem or whatever, your system, your DNA, whatever. Mm-hmm. So you're rolling your dice, you're in Vegas, or you're working with an insurance company, and the odds are against you that you're going to come out now.
Especially if you need him. Especially if you need it.
Exactly.
If it's something you're just paying into, you know, it's awesome. You just have the revenge, you know, the eventuality. The you never access it, it's all good. But when you realize, it's rare that I've seen a patient get into real trouble with a bad medical problem, cancer diagnosis, where something didn't go the way they thought it was going to go. They didn't get the coverage for the medical, for the chemo that they needed, or, you know, something was considered investigational that's been used for years. I mean, anything they can do to change the rule, to pull the rug out from under you when you really need it and you've paid into it, that's how it works. And they're getting richer and richer, and they're getting bigger and bigger. This is, bigger is not better. Let's talk about that when we return. You're listening to Medicine on Call.
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialdini, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report.
Welcome back to Medicine on Call. I mean, as I said before the break, bigger is not better. Bigger is, it breeds corruption, and it breeds inefficiency, and it breeds, in the face of medicine, people's lives are held in the balance. We were talking in the break about the lobby situation, and the insurance companies, the pharmaceutical companies are acting like a cartel where they get to decide what gets covered, and it's arbitrary. And, you know, I would, if there was a way to navigate the system that it was rigid and it was standardized and it didn't change, then you can actually operate in a manner that, okay, I know what to expect. I don't want to do X because I know Y is going to happen. That never works that way. And I was using the example about balloon dilation, which is an ENT, minimally invasive sinus procedure. It's allowed under Medicare and Medicaid. There's a code for it in the ICD-9, and it's covered by about, I'd say, 90% of the insurance companies in the country, except for Blue Cross Blue Shield, who calls it investigational. I don't care what you do. You can, and our ENT, the American Academy of Otolaryngology Board, has a whole white paper stating that this is appropriate care, that it's valid care, that it is, and in some studies, equal to taking someone to the OR to do sinus surgery. And they ignore all of that. They just get to decide what's investigational because they don't want to pay for it. Now, if the government is the arbiter of what should be covered and what's considered medically necessary, then why can't that apply to everybody? But it's arbitrary, and it's doubly arbitrary because if you live in South Carolina and you have Blue Cross Blue Shield, it works there. If you're in Texas, you can get the balloon sinus dilation there. You can get it in Florida. But in Georgia, it's like pulling teeth. So it's not even applied uniformly throughout the entire United States. It's a game. And I'm not exactly sure who is blocking it here in Georgia, for example. But it shouldn't even be able to be blocked. This is a medically necessary procedure. If you have meet the criteria to get it done, then an insurance company by right shouldn't be blocking it and making some arbitrary hurdle for you to pass. That's what patients don't understand. And you, as a policyholder paying your premiums, have a lot more power than you think, and you should be in someone's face. Call up your representative, you know, call up the insurance company. Ask to speak to anybody high up in the chain and let them know what you think. And you want to pull your money out of that system because it doesn't work for you. It's the power of the purse. We're getting better, I think, overall. That's why McDonald's is suffering. That's why Chipotle decided to take out genetically modified food. They're not stupid. That's why Coke, or I think Pepsi, is taking out some of the dyes. Not all of them, unfortunately. But they're making changes because their bottom line has dropped. 6% less sales in Diet Coke in our country. That's a lot of money for them. They can understand that. We can talk about it all day, but if you show and prove, they get it. You stop, you know, I know it's not possible, but what would be really awesome is that we just don't vote. Have an election and nobody come out. You can't cheat us, and you'll start taking us seriously when we just don't vote because our emotions are driven by, I'm voting for the Democrat no matter what, straight down the line, or the Republican straight down the line. Because I'm black, I vote a certain way. Because I'm a woman, I vote a certain. Forget about the groupthink. The groupthink generally doesn't work for you because the group doesn't represent me. I'm an individual. I have lots of different opinions that are probably counter to being what perceived black, perceived woman visions or thoughts should be, because I'm about what's best for me, what is ethical in my world, and how does this affect other people around me. It's not all about me, and I refuse to be a victim. That's another thing. Everybody's a victim all of a sudden, so everybody's entitled. You owe me, so I'm going to vote so that I can get something from you. But it doesn't work that way. It hasn't worked that way, and it won't work that way. And what it does is it puts you in a position where you're going to be victimized. You're going to be held hostage by your emotions.
I think people are finally realizing that what they got from Obamacare is a knife in the back. And more people are going to realize that as their rates go up, the care goes down.
Well, that's why they go into the ER. Or hopefully, if they're really savvy, they're opting into direct pay practices, to medical cost sharing, to anything that's parallel to this system. right? Use the system. Medical cost sharing is allowed within this system. I don't care if you want to use Samaritan, MediShare, Liberty Health Share, whatever your choice is. That's the antidote to Obamacare. It's not, I'm not waiting for Congress to overturn anything. It's not, I mean, they're up there calling themselves a small business, trying to game the system for their friends. Are you kidding? You think they're going to overturn this? Whatever the Republicans said to get in is what they said to get in. It's not what they're going to do. If I see John Boehner cry one more time, I'm going to be nauseous. I mean, I've never seen, he's totally unstable. I've never seen anybody cry that much. My God, my whole childhood, I never cried that much. It's a carnival and a casino. It's a bad combination of both. Withdraw your consent, folks. Nobody can make you buy stuff that's going to kill you. Nobody can make you work against your own interests. And you really have to figure out what your interests actually are now, instead of what they tell you they should be. I can't even watch MSNBC. We're barely able to watch Fox at this point. And I'm going to use an example that's, I know you've heard about the Texas thing, right? About the shooting in Texas. Well, the person who, is it Miss Geller, the one who had the freedom of speech?
Pamela
Geller. And there, the interviews uniformly asked her, do you think it's right that you did this? It's basically your fault because you wanted to stand up for freedom of speech. And I thought her answer was awesome. She didn't back down to them. She didn't cower. She basically said, this is the whole point of being an American, is to be able to exercise my free speech. I mean, where's the media come from this? I don't understand their attitude. I don't care if it's Fox, MSNBC, or whatever. The country does stand for freedom of speech. And we're being shut down on all levels if you dissent from what is considered by the groups in power right now to be the norm, to be right. And I take offense to that, especially with healthcare. So for the argument, and that's the thing, there is no argument, there is no more debate. And every time they say that we want a civil debate, the folks who are proponents of saying that are the worst when it comes to that. They don't want that. They want to shut you down. And every time you open your mouth to actually ask them a question, prove why you're saying what you're saying, you know, what's your background or basis for making your assumptions, you're racist, you're sexist, anything they can do to shut you up is what they go about doing. And I think that we honestly need to turn that on its head and stop playing into it. My first goal, and I've said it before, is to tell someone, I don't care what you think. And once you say that, you've basically stopped their attack on you. And the second thing you can actually say is, well, can you explain why you think something? Tell me where you read this. How did you come to this conclusion? Make them use an intellectual argument instead of an emotional argument. And if you can do that, you've already won the debate 9 times out of 10, because I don't believe most of the people who are policy wonks who talk about how it should be fair, but everybody has health care and, you know, without looking at the consequences or really thinking about how you get there. It's not taking from those who have and giving to those who don't have. That's not a valid way to go about doing things. You need to set up a system where everybody joins in and everybody has skin in the game and everybody has personal responsibility. That's how systems work. I'm sure I'm not going to get the opportunity, but I would love to go on one of these shows, these MSNBC type shows. I went on one and it was pretty bad because he just basically talked the whole thing. I had to get up and leave at the end. But if someone really wants to have a real debate with somebody who knows healthcare, I'd be happy to go on one of those shows and actually explain, you know, your mindset is good, but your approach to it is wrong. If we could all get to that point where we can stop my way or no way arguments, maybe we can actually fix this thing. It should be scrapped. You should remove the mandates. And if they did one thing in Congress, this is what I would say. Remove the mandate. Let people out of the rigid control and let them find their own level where they want to go. If you want Obamacare, you can have it. If you don't, you can opt into direct pay, fee for service, barter system, medical cost sharing system, whatever. And I have a feeling that if people were allowed to leave this system, it would work better. You would have less people in it, and it really would work better than it's going to work ever with a million people in it. It's too many people. They're going to deny care, but like they're doing. It's just, I think it's gone too far down the road to get rid of completely. But I think it should be a voluntary situation at this point.
You know, do you really think it was designed to work?
No, I think it was designed to get to single payer by blowing up a system from the inside.
Exactly.
Think about it. I mean, if they really wanted to cover people who didn't have insurance, all you had to do was expand Medicare or expand Medicaid, not get rid of insurance that people liked, force them onto Medicaid and Medicare. Basically, it's Medicaid. It's not even Medicare. I apologize. Obamacare is Medicaid with a bow on it. You know, that's all it is. And Medicaid is the worst aspect of health care. And the sad part about this whole government intrusion is that it does the opposite. Remember talking about people living well, doing better, having people who are outside on the outside looking in be part of the system. That's the rhetoric. But the reality is what you said a minute ago. If you actually do need services under Medicaid or Medicare and you have means, you have to sell them. You have to give them up. You have to become destitute in order to access the system. Well, Obamacare is a little bit less in your face about that. You're doing it in deductibles and co-insurances instead.
But it's still
still the same thing. But when you're really need some help, you've got cancer, you know, you've got a stroke, you cannot have land, you can't have property, you can't give it to your loved ones when you pass away. It's going to the government. It's just a search and seizure, basically. On that note, let's take a break. You're listening to Medicine on Call. Welcome back to Medicine on Call. You know, I used the term doublespeak a while back, and I wanted to explain, if you don't know what that means, this is the definition. If you look in Wikipedia, it's the deliberately disguises, distorts, or reverses the meaning of words. Doublespeak may take the form of euphemisms, downsizing for layoffs, servicing the target for bombing, in which case it is primarily meant to make the truth sound more palatable. It may also refer to intentional ambiguity in language or to actual inversions of meaning, for example, naming a state of war peace. In such cases, doublespeak disguises the nature of the truth. Doublespeak is associated most clearly with political language. And I think that crystallizes how the government works and how the agents of the government, the public agents of the government, are working. That's what Obamacare was presented. It was doublespeak. Affordable health care, Affordable Care Act. It's the opposite. It's not about care. It's not about affordable. It's about control. Now we're waking up to the fact that, man, this isn't what I thought it was. I can't keep my doctor. The doctors who thought, oh, man, I'm going to get high tech, the electronic medical record, I'm going to get $14,000 to switch over to electronic medical records. And in actuality, it's a prison, because now you have to do meaningful use. Now you have to basically dot your I, cross your T, close those sections of the chart. Otherwise, you won't get paid. And what was a voluntary situation, once they hook you, once you get enough doctors who have this system, they lock you down and you have to do it if you expect to get paid. This new one, what is it? The Medicare Children's CHIP Act, whatever, HR2, that was about fixing the doctor fix. It's the opposite. The lobby group with the AMA, or I should say the American Board, Medical Specialty Boards, got in the ear of Congress, and there's a white paper on this. If you go to my devaluation of the American Doctor blog, there's a link to it. And they basically said, we want to help you. We want to be able to tell Congress what constitutes medical education. And in their view, medical education and people pursuing their medical education every year in practice is maintenance of certification, which they control, which they own, which you have to pay in as a physician if you expect to actually practice medicine, to maintain your board certification status if you fall into that that crack. This is who stands to gain right in your face. It was never about, I want doctors to continue to be educated, to be on the cutting edge. It has nothing to do with that. It's a cartel, private, who gets to a private-public partnership with Congress so that Congress goes to them to validate a physician. And all that means is that the doctors now have to pay to play. That's all it means to the various specialty boards. And go ahead.
There's, pardon me. There's a new one though that's going to be on the doctor's lounge. It's the certification, but it's I'm going to misstate this.
Mm-hmm.
But it's everything that the certification today isn't.
Right.
Instead of having to redo the test, they go by your records and you don't have to take this stupid test every time.
That's Dr. Tierstein, I think, is one of the doctors who's created an alternate board of certification.
Right, right.
But you just can't be board certified in it. You already have had to have been board certified. So there is a quality control. You can't just certify into that. But it allows physicians like myself and physicians who trained after me, who unfortunately are under the yoke of that recertification status, to opt out completely. Once you're board certified, you should maintain board certification. Or if you have a malpractice issue or you're a bad doctor, you'll be dealt with in another way. But it's like a lawyer having to take the bar over and over again. What lawyer in this country, after, I know it takes a lot of everything you have to pass the bar. Do you want to do that every 2 years? Is it fair to ask you to do that? But these are lawyers who do this to us. They must really hate doctors. I don't understand why there's so much hate towards doctors. But I say we take our power back. You can't run the healthcare system without a physician. Maybe we should all take a holiday.
Yeah, it's all about money, though.
It is about money and about control, because you have someone by the short hairs. They're going to dot every I, cross every T, just to keep their position in the hospital, to be able to admit, to be able to actually, if they work for the hospital, in order to continue to work for them, you bet you're going to be doing those maintenance certification and like it. Otherwise, you're fired.
They pointed out on the show, how many times have you had a patient come in and said, Dr. George, what are your certifications? And when was the last time you took a CEU? Or, doesn't happen.
Well, you know what? I'm proud of my certifications. You can ask me all day. I earned them. It took me 20-some-odd years to get them. And I don't think some arbitrary board has the right to just remove them when I am a good doctor. I love what I do. How dare you decide my worth and try to take away my livelihood? I will fight you tooth and nail if it comes to that. And hopefully, like Dr. Tierstein's doing, a lot more doctors are just sick of this.
You pushed us. San Diego, right?
Actually, no, he's New York.
Okay, well, there's one in San Diego.
There may be a couple of doctors. I mean, I think
together.
We're coalescing because we're done. I mean, you poked a bear long enough that I think a lot of us are at the end of this system. We realize there is no, it's not going to get better. It's only going to get worse. And the patients are waking up to the fact that it's not going to get better. It's going to get worse. And as soon as we band together, we actually need to come together. I've said it before. I still mean it. If doctors and patients, those who are self-aware, who have self-respect, who do not want their individual freedoms to be stepped on, and that's one of the things about being a doctor. It's about being an entrepreneur. That was the mindset of what made someone open their own practice, to run their own show. They're trying to take away that livelihood. Are we going to let them do it? There's a limited amount of time. This HR2 is a bad deal, but we still have the option of opting out of Medicare and Medicaid. That only applies to that. Now, the commercial insurances may start doing it, but you know what? If they don't have a panel of physicians, they'll stop it really quickly. Just opt out. Don't take insurance anymore. Make a deal with your patients. I can tell you, from a doctor perspective, it'll be a heck of a lot cheaper for you to see me and pay me cash, us make a deal, than for you to access your deductible, your co-insurance. You're paying for them to say no. And I'm going to work a deal with you so you can say yes. Which one do you want to go on? Go on. Now, which pathway do you want to go down? And all of those freestanding ambulatory surgery centers, freestanding radiology centers, freestanding labs are willing, ready, able to cut you a deal that is a fraction of what you'll pay by going to the hospital version of it. There is no hospital in this country that's cheaper than an ambulatory center. Nobody. And that's a fact. And if you can wake up to that and get out of the track to this mindset of, if I don't have a health insurance, I'm going to die, let that go. If you have health insurance, you're more likely to die. If you stay in Obamacare, you're quality of life will be cut short because someone's going to put a value on it. That's what value-based means. Not only are they going to value me as a physician, they're going to value you as a patient. You come in with a disease that's considered to be incurable, costly, they're not going to spend money on you. Ask the people out in England how that's working. Ask the people in any socialized system. Canada, Sweden, Germany, they all have two-tier systems now. They have a private track and a public one.
It's a real easy equation. How much longer does this guy have that he can be paying taxes to support us? That's the equation.
Well, that equation is pretty, it has a limit. It has a half-life or a time limit on it. Definitely does. And the more people that are out of work and the economy is just, it's not great, people. It's not. I mean, they're talking about, and I think they've already done it, you can't even take out more than $5,000 out of your bank before the government starts looking at you. You know, they may seize your account if you try something like that. So they're limiting how much access you have to your own money. They want this in the system. They're trying now in Louisiana, you cannot pay cash for any third-party things. So if you go to a flea market, a garage sale, you cannot pay cash for those transactions. They want to monitor everything you do from the time you're born to the time you leave this earth. I'm not going to be in a system like that. That's not working for me. So I guess we're coming to the end of the show. So you can follow me on Twitter. You can follow me on Facebook on Medicine on Call. And check out my newest blog, The Devaluation of the American Physician, and American Physician and its effect on the American patient. And I will see you next week on Medicine on Call.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. LibertyTalk.fm.